Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies profiled. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Hey everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. In this weekend's edition, we're going to be focusing on the commodities sectors. Man, there are a lot of commodities that continue to perform and a lot of money that has now rotated into a lot of these commodities stocks. The first two segments, we're going to touch on more of the metal side of things, precious metals, base metals. And in the back half of the show, we're moving over to the energy sectors as we have seen a rebound, a strong move actually in oil, and even a bit of a rebound in natural gas. To kick off the show, we're chatting with Nick Hodge, co-owner of Digest Publishing and editor of Foundational Profits and Hodge Family Office. Now, Nick, let's start off with kind of a big picture view here of markets as they tie into commodities. Rotation has been a story over the last about 2.5 years where money seems to stay within the markets and rotate into different sectors, pushing different sectors higher at different times. In the last about month and a half now, it really has been the commodities time to shine as we've seen precious metals, gold and silver move higher. Copper's also moved higher. Uranium was kind of running last year. Nick, let's talk about this rotation trade. Your thoughts on, is this the time early on potentially or even mid-stage where you're seeing money kind of rotate into the commodities because maybe they were the ones that were lagging a lot of the other sectors?
And there's a lot to break off there and chew on. So let me, you know, climb up in my airplane as I typically do and tell you that I think we're in a commodity super cycle that started in 2020. I've told you guys that a couple of times. These super cycles ebbs and flows. Speaking, Corey, to what you were just saying, how, you know, money goes into different things at different times with different drivers. But overall, I think we're in a commodity boom that started 4 years ago. And you saw a bit of a pullback in that over the past, call it 18 months, certainly in things like lithium and PGMs, which I know we'll talk about in a second, while other things have been running. So gold is what you want to know about. I mean, look, it closed the first quarter of 2024, the end of March, you know, above $2,100. That's a real important technical indicator. You know, you talk about money coming into the sector recently. That's what bigger funds, generalist funds, you know, non-resource specific funds, they need to see things like that before they start putting capital to work. So a monthly close, a March close at that $2,100 level for gold was, you know, probably a shot across the bow of some of these the generalist funds to start investing in the sector. The other thing is, you know, inflation is reinflating if you're looking for another driver, right? So we had this narrative that, you know, the inflation was under control, that the Fed was going to begin cutting this year, you know, 3 cuts starting in June. But what's happened is the exact inverse of that in terms of reality and inflation. You know, you've had oil go from 60 some dollars to 80 some dollars. You just mentioned that copper was over 4. I told you, by the way, that it was time for copper to break out in the past couple of months. I told you that was coming and that looks very healthy. So what I'm seeing is in terms of precious metals specifically, they're acting as an inflation hedge, right? With CPI coming out 3.8% recently, you know, the Fed's not going to be able to cut in June. And so I like this kind of market. And I was sort of telling you guys this 2 months ago when I pivoted from, you know, sort of bearish on the broad equities to bullish is that we're not really contingent on the Fed here, right? You know, inflation's doing its thing, growth is doing its thing. And, you know, I don't think a quarter point, you know, cut from the Fed in June or July is really what investors are focusing on here. I think they're focusing on more fundamental drivers like inflation and growth. And that's what gold is pricing in. So I'd have to tell you that with a strong CPI number out this week, you know, people are saying, though, the Fed's not going to be able to cut. The dollar had a really strong pop. And yet gold is just sort of hovering, right? Look, it just actually is teetering as I'm talking right now. It's going from green to red on my screen. So gold is bullish. Inflation is reinflating. And I think we're in a commodity super cycle that started 4 years ago and is going to last another 5 years. So, and now other things are going to start to join the party again in ebbs and flows. So happy to talk about some of those things if you want. And hopefully that was a decent answer to what was a pretty broad question.
Yeah, Nick, it is a pretty broad concept, the commodity super cycle and the commodities taking off. But as you say, across the board, we're seeing pops in a lot of these. Let's just focus in on gold and the precious metal sector for a little longer, though. And when you look at gold, it's been breaking higher despite a relatively strong dollar and despite what was happening in interest rates, and shrugged off one of the most aggressive tightening cycles that we've seen in a long period of time for decades. So all things considered, gold has done great, but what's been buoying the gold price has been central bank buying. Now, central banks don't buy silver, and they don't buy gold stocks or silver stocks. So what's been exciting recently is that silver has finally popped its head up above that $26 resistance level. Now it's up above $28. And the precious mining stocks, not just the majors and the mid-tiers, but even all the way down in the juniors, have finally started to move. So what is your read on where we're at in the precious metal cycle right now?
Well, you're bullish. And so silver is starting to turn bullish as well. You know, I like for gold to confirm. And then I start looking at silver, and silver was acting more industrial here until recently. I think that you've got inflation worries percolating through the market. I think that you've got people interested in buying gold and silver, you know, partially in the U.S. I keep seeing this, you know, story about Costco selling its gold bars. I think Wells Fargo just said they're selling some $200 million worth of them. But certainly globally, you know, China and India likes to buy gold and silver. And what I've seen recently is silver decoupling from being an industrial metal and becoming, you know, more of a precious metal. And I guess let's drill down on that for a second. A couple of things going on there. One that really drives it home for me is clean energy has been weak. So if we've been talking about, you know, a bull market. I've told you I've gotten bullish in broad-based equities, even on AI and some tech stocks I've been owning and recommending. What I haven't been as bullish on and what's not worked as well in the market is, you know, these clean energy stocks, solar stocks, wind stocks, hydrogen. And for a while, I was hearing, you know, from the silver permabulls, I have to laugh because, you know, it was silver time since Wall Street silver 3 years ago, and it went absolutely nowhere. And there was always some driver, right? Most recently, it was solar stocks are going to drive silver to the moon, right? I don't necessarily think that's the case, right? And I don't think solar just breached 26 or 27, you know, on the back of solar deployments globally. What I think that is driving silver up is inflation fears and traditional drivers of precious metals. And so to me, it's not that complicated in my mind. You've got silver now not acting industrial and acting more as a precious metal. And that means it's time to buy it in my mind. And so as I've explained to you, we've been doing these talks for a while now. You probably know how I go about things. I'll start with a silver ETF, a pure commodity ETF. Is sort of a prodding attack, which I've mentioned before, make sure I'm right, and then start going into the equities. You know, if for silver, I'm not an expert. I'm more of a generalist. So I do things, you know, like Mag Silver, for example, is an easy one to get into when silver starts turning bullish. But as far as where we are in the cycle, I mean, I can't tell you how long the cycle is going to last. What I can tell you is that inflation is going to continue to persist higher than, you know, the government, the Fed and the Biden administration want. And that's going to benefit things like gold, silver, other commodities and crypto to a certain extent. So, you know, even my partner, Gerardo Del Real, who you guys might know, was asking me as recently as a month or two ago if it's time to buy silver. And I was telling him no. So I guess what I'm saying is I'm willing to change my mind. And since we've talked last, the three of us, I've changed my mind on silver. And I'm not right all the time. No one is, right? I told you also last time, you know, the guy who buys the absolute bottom and sells the absolute top is an absolute liar. So did I miss the bottom in silver? Yeah, maybe. Do I care? No, because I can buy it now and it's bullish and it can go higher. And so I guess a couple of remarks there about how I think about silver and how I think about investing generally. So yeah, silver, less industrial, more precious metal, and getting bullish for sure.
Nick, can we drive down to some of the juniors, gold and silver juniors? Because broadly, a lot of these have, let's say, about doubled from some of their lows just at the very end of February. We're seeing a lot of financings come out. But quite frankly, a $2 million financing, that's still just lights on money. I know you sometimes get into these financings. How are you viewing the juniors, their rebound, which it has been a double, but hasn't done much for the long-term charts, and now a lot more companies coming out and financing?
Well, you know, I feel like a crypto investor because I'm hodling my junior gold and silver stocks. Last month, I was saying that one of the things I wanted to be cautious of was not selling too soon. And that happens sometimes in this space, especially if you buy too soon, right? And buying too soon is also known as being wrong. And what happens is you end up underwater for so long that once you get an uptick, like we've seen over the past month, you're in a rush to get out. So I continue to warn against that to my readers and also to myself. And I'll give you one example. And then we can go from there. A company I've been involved in for a while, a long time, like a decade, is Perpetua Resources. It used to be called Midas Gold. They've been in a permitting process for 7 or 8 years in Idaho, and I was involved in the stock before that, and it's gone absolutely nowhere. You know, they've rolled back, et cetera, et cetera. You know, the stock was recently down at $3 or $4 Canadian and has just been languishing there. I mean, right, no catalyst, delays in permitting. It had drifted down from like $10 to, I'm looking at it now, a low of $3.50. That $3.50 low was hit, by the way, at the end of February, so less than 2 months ago. And I remember a mentor of mine telling me, you know, when you get a bull market, people are going to be fighting over this thing at $10 or $15 when no one wanted to buy it at $3 or $4, right? That's sort of how resources work. And lo and behold, what happens? They're scheduled to get their permit this quarter. We'll see if it happens. But they got money from the Department of Defense. And then this week or last week, I guess it was, they announced an indication of a $1.8 billion loan from the Export-Import Bank to build this thing, and shares leapt to over $9. Remember what I just said. This was a $3.50 stock in February. It's a $9 stock as I look at it right now. They haven't even got their permit yet. And so, you know, I was talking to my partner and my mentor. It was, you know, I've now doubled my money quickly in the past 30 or 45 days. And I was talking about taking profits, and they advised me what I was just advising you. This thing doesn't even have a permit yet, right? There's a lot further to run up. So, you know, let these winners run. Now, that's a bigger name that's in permitting, right? We're gonna start to construct this thing soon. That's a lot different than, you know, a $2.5 million or a $5 million market cap company on the smaller end of the spectrum. Those are the guys across the board that tend to raise money when the prices tick up because, you know, juniors are always burning money. They're not generating any revenue. So they always need to raise money to keep moving forward. When you get an uptick in the prices is when they tend to take advantage of that. And that can, you know, sometimes not be good for retail shareholders. So I think I was telling you guys last month when I was looking at my financings, you know, my warrants were starting to expire because some of these things I had financed 2-3 years ago, and if they had a 2 or 3 year warrant, that's coming up for expiration and likely not in the money yet, you know, despite the good month of March and April that we had in the resource space. So I will start to write checks into these companies. So I can get that warrant extension is primarily what I'm looking for. I want to be able to have exposure in the future because I don't have a crystal ball that lets me know how it is going to play out. And so, yes, I will start financing into these companies. I guess another thing I would say is that it just speaks to the illiquidity of the sector, how these stocks have gone up here in the past month or two, right? So, you know, you look at some of these 10 or 15 centers, and you do the dollar volume math, right? Like look at their volume, how many shares traded hands times the price, right? And you'll see that some of these stocks are doubling on $30,000 or $50,000 worth of buying. And so I think it's still really early in the cycle. You know, you look at the stocks versus the gold price, they still got a lot of upside left. And so I'm feeling bullish and I'm trying to prevent myself from selling too soon. I forget what the question was. Sorry.
Well, it was a great answer, Nick, and it's a great point to not to sell too soon and that we are still early in this process. And to your point, a lot of these stocks are moving up, but on very low volume. So there's not a mania in the space, far from it, and there's probably a lot longer to run. And maybe some of those warrants and new financings, you get another 2 or 3 year window here, they'll be in the money this time. So definitely some good momentum going in the precious metal space. Let's toggle over to copper, though. The good doctor, Dr. Copper, finally breaking above four. It really now up in the 420s, almost at 430, and getting close to that same level that we saw just last year as a peak. Now, you were not table pounding bullish, Nick, and I want to give you credit because for years, everybody's been pounding the table on copper, 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 and it's finally looking like this is a move that's going to be a more sustainable run. Even the copper stocks, if you look at the producers and COPEX, or I know you mentioned last time you're in ICOP, That new fund. There's actually a lot of new copper ETFs now with COPP from Sprott and COPJ from Sprott for the junior. So you got four copper ETFs, more momentum in the space. How are you playing it? Are you just in the producers or are you delving down into the juniors too?
Yeah, that ETF's up 20% in the past month, by the way, since I bought it and talked to you guys about it. That's good work if you can get it on a mainstream listed ETF. That just goes to show why timing matters. If you remember, I told you I bought that ETF because I thought China was going to be one of the main drivers behind this, you know, rising copper price, this reinflation of commodity prices where China's sort of been closed off for the past couple of years. And so we did go into ICOP, and that's worked out well. I own other copper juniors for sure that I financed privately. Last month, I was telling you about Hannon as my example. That stock's up 90% in the past month. They announced another copper gold porphyry target just this morning before we spoke. They'll likely, you know, back to financings on the last question, they'll likely be raising money in May, and I'll recommend that financing and we'll write a check into it. I think I also told you about Gladiator as another small stock I'm in. Gladiator Metals up in the Yukon. That's another stock that's added, you know, 5 or 7 cents from a 30-cent base here in the past couple of weeks. So I own them differently, and I try to make myself clear, and I feel like I don't sometimes. But on the junior side, I tend to buy and hold for a long time. I get access to cheap financings. I get access early in life cycles. And these things take a long time to play out. And so I have them in my portfolio and I finance them over time. They're starting to move now. I think the other thing I told you is that I do these priming attacks, right? So I bought the ICOP. And now that I've been proven correct, I'll look to get more aggressive, right? So I'll look to get into individual names like the Ivanhoes and the Southern Coppers and the Philos of the world. And I'm going through some of those right now. And it's sort of funny just to sort of, you know, watch how these things play out if you know what to look for in real time, given that, you know, everyone is on Twitter and social media. I see that Mr. Friedland is getting his promoter's hat dusted off as well, you know, going back on the Twitter and talking about Ivanhoe, et cetera. And so, yeah, these copper stocks are looking really good. It's time to start, you know, matriculating into the individual larger names and then, you know, continue writing checks into these copper juniors as I sort of just laid out. What's changed, I guess, is maybe an interesting question. What's changed for me? I didn't write that many checks last year. That's probably what changes for me. I get back into check writing mode, and then I get back into, you know, open market buying mode. Like I just said, you know, percolating into these different large copper producers that are liquid while keeping my sort of stable of copper juniors close to me that I invest and fund and keep going. Just another point on that, not necessarily on copper specifically, but just on market dynamics and flows and time frames and, you know, being a real resource investor. Look, I financed Revival Gold. You guys may have come across it. This is a company with 4 million ounces in Idaho. I remember writing my first check into that company because I did it while I was moving across the country. I was literally driving across the country when I wrote my first check into that company. It was 2017. So it's 2024. And just this week, that company announced it's, you know, it's making an acquisition of a gold asset in Utah. So these stories take years, sometimes decade or more to play out. And in the case of copper specifically, you can know all the things that you sort of said, Shad, that people are pounding the table on copper. There's going to be a deficit, the EV revolution, this, that, and the other thing. Like, we know it's coming. And so that's why I fund ongoing, you know, these copper juniors, and I stay in the game, give myself exposure, and then can get bigger. Cause like you said, they're going to raise money when it's actually time. And then I use those liquid vehicles, ETFs, more in my retirement accounts, just as a generalist investor, like buying them when it's time to get bullish on copper, for example. So it's different styles, different mentalities, different philosophies of investing. And I hope I don't confuse your listeners and my readers when I write about them, but that's how I think about markets and that's how I execute. And it's different because I do them in different accounts, right? Like I have multiple brokerage accounts, I have multiple IRAs, et cetera. And what I'm doing in one might be for one reason, and it might be different than why I'm financing a copper junior. So that's how I just think about capital and how I think about markets and how I manage my accounts overall.
I've got one more on the copper stocks, and I think it was funny that you brought up Revival, because I went to a site visit, man, years and years ago. That company's still around, and yeah, as you said, now diversifying. When it comes to copper stocks that have pounds in the ground, where there are a number of them, what separates the higher quality ones for you? These aren't exploration stocks. These are stocks that have defined resources that, in all fairness, you can find companies like this in almost every jurisdiction around the world. So how do you do your due diligence on these?
Yeah, so one is structure. How is the company structured? I'm a big structure guy. I tend to look at that first. So who are the partners? How much did insiders pay for their shares, et cetera? So structure is a big thing. And then leadership and management. And, you know, I give you one example, I guess, just because we're talking about copper. So I've been in Aldebaran Resources for a couple of years, have written a check or two in there and have bought shares in the open market. That checks all the boxes I just told you. They've got Route One, who is a big, you know, mining finance company that has a significant stake. They've got South 32, who has a significant stake. They've got Sibanye, who has a stake as well. They've been sort of letting themselves get diluted out a bit. But nonetheless, you got South 32 and Route One. So that's the sort of the structure and the partners. This is an asset in Argentina, by the way, very large, drilled out asset, has a resource. We'll have a resource update coming here in the second half of 2024. But then you've got leadership in John Black, who has, you know, sold a copper company before for hundreds of millions of dollars. And so you have a team that's been through cycles and has sold assets and knows how to deal with majors. And so, you know, if we're comparing apples and apples, that's how I would differentiate.
All right, Nick. Hey, awesome chatting with you. Thank you again for focusing a bit more on the metals, the commodities, the runs that we have seen, and diving down into some of those stocks that you are interested in. Look, these are some of the bigger commodity sectors out there, and these stocks have really started to bounce. Majors and now even down into the juniors just in the last couple of weeks. I know it has a lot of investors wondering, has this run gone too far? We are due for a pullback. What does a pullback look like? And how much higher could these go? Just look at a long-term chart and it shows you how much upside these stocks potentially have if we are in this commodity super cycle as you laid out. Nick, thank you very much for taking time on this weekend show. Everyone, stick around. We're going to be right back with Joseph Schachter focusing on the energy sector.
Thank you both.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.